Oh, and if either one of you is not in the chat channel, you will want to join the chat channel. We take we do we transcribe everything in the chat channel there.
Hi, this is Mishy Johnson.
Hi, Mishy. Welcome.
Hi, Adam. I'm
Sorry, this
glad
is Manu.
everyone. Okay, hi, Manu. Sorry, I
No
can't see.
problem. And then there's Adam. Adam just joined us.
Hi, everyone.
And Mishy, you may want to join the chat channel. That's where we share links and everything.
Okay.
The link to the chat channel is in the invite that was sent out. Here,
Okay, cool.
see Anya joining.
And Kilnam said he was going to be 5 to 10 minutes late.
Okay.
Yes, sorry, I was muted. No, I was in the channel earlier today already, so that's quite straightforward. But.
Okay, and we'll explain why we're doing, you know, some of these things the way that we are once the call starts. The other thing I want to make sure that everyone's aware of is, you know, so, you know, for transparency purposes, we're recording and transcribing the calls. And, you know, if there's something that, you know, you want to say off the record, you can just mention it and we can remove it from the text and the audio. But at the same time, you know, we're endeavoring to make this as transparent of a process as possible, and that's kind of why we're running the calls like that, at least in the beginning. And again, if there are any objections to that, we can certainly talk about it and change the way that we run these calls. This is kind of standard operating procedure for a lot of W3C community group calls.
Okay, I have no objections to being recorded or any of that, but I do have to point it out that if there will be matters which may have legal liability for the organization, and sometimes the directors may want to discuss certain things which are not available for public records right away. They may be made available in certain conditions, but I will just caution you that they should be available for the members and directors of the organization, but not just out there in the public. That's just the lawyer in me telling you, but otherwise I have no objections.
Absolutely. That is a completely valid point, and we have considered that and have a suggestion on how we do that. I just wanted to, you know, make sure that everyone knew, at least for the purposes of this call, since it's mostly informational, we'll do recording and transcription. And it absolutely has to be possible for the board to have non-public calls, but we're trying to, again, minimize the number of those so that, you know, if there's a need for one of those calls, it is because, you know, we're discussing something that's confidential in nature. But thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and get started, and I think, Adam, you said Kilnam will join us in a little bit.
Yes.
So we already covered a tiny bit of, you know, how the calls are run. So for those of you that are not familiar with how W3C community groups operate calls, The goal here is to try and be as transparent as possible with information that is public and should be public. One of the goals of the VerisOne network is to operate as transparently as possible so that the general public gets to understand why the network is operating the way it is, you know, how decisions were made to, you know, change the way the network operates, and so on and so forth. So we record the audio. We transcribe everything said on the call, it is possible to say something off the record, and we will go back in and strike that from the transcription and strike it from the audio. But in general, we ask that, we don't bring up those things on this call. It's just easier for everyone. If there is a need for a private conversation, we should bring that up privately and have that privately. So that's in general, that's the general operation of the calls. When we finish the call, we typically publish the transcription to the VerisOne Community Group mailing list. If you're not on that mailing list, please let us know and we can give you instructions on joining. The other reason that we run the calls like this is because W3C community groups have a intellectual property rights mechanism that enables the people to make contributions of intellectual property kind of to the general public, or basically it having these calls public allows us to talk about things and specifically state that we're not claiming any intellectual property rights concerns around anything that we're discussing. This is more important when it comes to the technology stuff than it does kind of the operational stuff. But that's the other reason that we, have these calls with a, well-developed IPR release in place. Now, to be clear, no one on the call yet, except for those of us that are in the community group, have done that IPR release, and that is okay because we're not going to talk about any kind of anything that has IPR concerns on the call today. As far as the process here, we are reusing a process, at least the call process that the W3C has used and developed over the past 25, 30 years. So if you're used to international standards or how those are developed, a lot of this should feel familiar to you, specifically the transcription. We do have a chat channel that I believe everyone's in right now, and that allows us to do things like queuing. So if you want to say something, you can type Q plus, like I just did, and then everyone will see that you're waiting to talk and you would like to say something. Q minus removes yourself from the queue, and there are other commands to, to see who's on the call, for us to handle muting or detecting audio on a channel. Anyway, there's a infrastructure here to help us run these calls efficiently. Okay, so I think that's it as far as kind of administrivia on how we run the calls. If you need to say something, please just say, hey, please put me on the queue. Or you can add yourself to the queue, and I will, I'll see that and say, so-and-so would like to speak, and then hand it over to you. That also enables people that are, I don't want to say shy, but, are not used to speaking in a large group. It enables them to be able to speak as well. Okay, that's it for how we run the calls. Are there any questions on that yet? Okay, if there are no questions there, let's go ahead and get into introductions. Let's see, I'm gonna cue. So Anya, would you mind going, and then Henriette, and then Michi, and then I'll put Charles at the end there. And then I can introduce some of the other board folks that are not here. But Anya, would you mind introducing yourself briefly?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So my name is Anya. I am normally based in India, where I run the Internet Democracy Project. We're a not-for-profit initiative that works at the intersection of internet policy and human rights, specifically from a feminist social justice perspective, looking at norms, governance, culture. At the moment, I am based in Rio de Janeiro, though, where I'm a CyberBRICS research fellow at FGV, a private university in Rio, for about 6 months. That really ties in very closely with the work that we do at the Internet Democracy Project. I'm looking here at questions around data governance, and together with freedom of expression, that's one of our big research focuses at the Internet Democracy Project as well. We are in general a research-based initiative, but we build our advocacy on that. Is that kind of what you were looking for, Adam?
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Anya. Let's go ahead and hear from Henriette next.
Hi, I'm muting. So Henriette Esterhuizen here, based in Johannesburg, South Africa, and here for a change at the moment. I'm formerly Executive Director of Association for Progressive Communication, currently working as a consultant for APC for about half of my time, actually more, but my contract is for half time, doing various supporting the organization in global policy and advocacy and strategic planning. I also manage two projects for APC, the African School on Internet Governance and the African Declaration on Internet Rights and Principles. Aside from that, I'm a commissioner for the Global Commission on the Stability of Cyberspace and also doing some support work with the Internet Governance Forum at the moment. And I have the pleasure of having worked with and known both Mishi and Anya in the past. So actually really nice to be with you in this space and on this call. That's it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Andrea. Mishi, you're up next.
Yes, there are these very, very powerful women on your board already. So I'm very glad I am in great company in addition to all of you. My name is Mishi Chatri. I am based in New York mostly, but I'm not in New Delhi. I am a lawyer. I have a law practice here, mostly catering to tech companies, and my clients are all free and open source software developers of all the major projects in the world you've heard of and companies who use open source software. I am also the founder of SFLC.in, which is a legal services and policy-based organization headquartered in New Delhi, and which works on the issues of free speech and expression, privacy, surveillance, and internet freedom. So here I am to do the best I can to help support this new foundation.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mishi, and we're deeply appreciative of each of you contributing your time, your very valuable time to the initiative. Let's see, who is Charles? Go ahead. And you might be muted,
yep.
Charles.
Yeah,
there you
pressed the right button because I have a bad habit of getting it wrong. My name's Charles Neville. I've been doing standard stuff at W3C for 20-something years. Currently, I actually work on Enterprise Ethereum with the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. A company called Consensus pays my wages and then seconds me for most of my time. I've worked on various other things like accessibility, internationalization, semantic web stuff. Most of those things never quite go away from what I do, as Manu knows to his cost. So I guess that's it. I'm based in Madrid for whatever that's worth.
Great, wonderful. Wonderful to have you here, Charles. Let's see, Adam, why don't you do a quick intro to yourself, and then actually hold on 1 second before you do that. I want to make it clear that, you know, this is the folks that have spoken so far are on the VerisOne Board of Governors. We did just get another person join. Was that you, Matt, or was that someone else? Was that you, Kelnum?
Yes.
Hey, would you mind doing a quick introduction to yourself, Kelnum?
No, I have a cold. I can't speak too much.
Okay. That's fine. We'll do that in a little bit. So the only folks that we're missing from the board, well, actually, we're only missing one person, and that's Dorothy. I don't think she could make it today, but, you know, it's fantastic to have, you know, almost every board member on the call. So, again, thank you very much for making the time for this call. Now we're going to do some quick intros to kind of some of the folks that have been supporting behind the scenes. First up is Adam. Why don't you go ahead and do a quick intro to yourself, Adam, and then Matt after Adam. Go ahead, Adam.
Yep. Adam Lake here, head of business development for Digital Bazaar. Very excited about the VerisOne project and, you know, helping people have sovereignty and civil liberties on the web, and have the honor of helping put together the VerisOne Foundation and bring all the pieces together.
Awesome. Thank you, Adam. Matt?
Hello, everyone. I'm Matt Collier with Digital Bazaar, one of the software engineers. I've been involved with the VerisOne project since its inception. So thank you all for participating.
Awesome. Thank you. And then, of course, my name's Manu Sporny. I'm one of the co-founders here at Digital Bazaar, and you know, a number of us, you know, had this vision for what a decentralized identifier network should be many years ago, and have been working towards that end ever since. And we're absolutely thrilled to have each of you be a part of this and help us kind of build out this, what we hope is global infrastructure for humanity over the next couple of years. Okay, so let's see. Let's go ahead and jump into the agenda for today. So we did introductions. We're going to give you an update on where the testnet is and where development schedule is. We're going to give you an update on where the nonprofit and corporation status is, and kind of discuss how we're hoping to hand this entire network over to the Board of Governors and the Advisory Council and the community in time. So that's what we have on the agenda, but if there are other things that any of you would like to add to the agenda, please let me know. So are there any other things that you'd like to kind of chat about today while we're all together? Okay, so we'll just go with that agenda. And again, the agenda is fairly loose. We can certainly, we have time at the end of the call as well. To cover any topics that folks that just come up during the discussion. Okay, so let's start off with an update. And specifically, you know, I wanted to apologize that we have been out of touch so much. The primary reason for that is that many of us are fantastically overworked at this point. It's certainly not out of a desire to not be in touch. It's just, you know, lots of things need to be done, and we've had to really focus on, you know, getting the technology in good order before taking this step. But that said, let's go ahead and do the update. So the concept of the VerisOne network started many years ago. We were able to do development on that system and launch the first testnet in February of last year, 18 months ago. Since we launched that network, we have had 100% uptime for the network. So when we launched in February, and we weren't really counting on that, we were expecting there to be something, you know, come up that was an issue, but the network has been up and operating 24/7, 365 since the day of its launch, which speaks really well to the stability of the network. That doesn't mean we haven't had glitches here and there. In fact, there's one thing that has gone wrong in the last 18 months, and that's the TLS certificates for some of the nodes would not renew unless we would manually renew those TLS certificates. So that is the only bug that is in the system. We believe the newest software has fixed that, and we'll get into that here in a bit. But if you'll remember, there were some guiding principles with the Veris One testnet since the beginning. One of them was that we were not going to do an initial coin offering. We were not going to tie the network to a cryptocurrency, primarily because from an economic perspective, we felt that it had negative consequences when it came to effectively an identifier layer, an identity layer for the web and the internet. Because cryptocurrencies tend to be affected pretty negatively by market speculation and large corporate interests jumping in and manipulating the cryptocurrency, we wanted to decouple that from the network as much as we could. And because of that, that has not resulted in an operating budget that is easy for us to make rapid progress on, right? I mean, we didn't have tens to hundreds of millions of dollars to apply to this network. But at the same time, in hindsight, we believe that was the right decision, right? I mean, there's still the other concern about the cryptocurrency stuff is that it immediately puts the network into debt, and we believe that this is one of the first debt-free decentralized identifier networks on the planet, and that bodes well for long-term operating costs, which we want to be as low as possible, because if we're trying to extend the service to everyone on the planet, we need to make sure that the costs are as low as we can possibly get them. So the good news is that technically it's been operating. We've been making progress. We believe in hindsight that we did make the right calls. The only downside is that we don't have a tremendous amount of spare cash to operate on. But beside that, we feel like the system is operating really well and as designed. We put a new network online, a new testnet launched 3 weeks ago. So this is the second iteration of the testnet. There are just a bunch of new updates to the technology, mainly to continue to be aligned with the decentralized identifier specification, which is being performed at W3C, to ensure that the network can scale at a better rate than it did initially, and just various bug fixes and things like that. Now these are all preemptive bug fixes, things that we found in the source code that we felt needed to be fixed, and so on and so forth. So we have not made any kind of public announcement about that second testnet yet. We wanted to have this discussion before we made that second testnet announcement. We'd like to announce it next week unless there are any kind of objections from the folks on the call today. So the second testnet is being, was launched three weeks ago. We haven't made a public announcement about it yet. We're marching towards a production release of the network, and our hope is that we do that before the end of this year. There are all of the major features are in there, save one. There is one potential bug that we're concerned about with respect to how the network behaves when there is an all-out attack being applied to the network. So this is in the case where there is some kind of concerted attack by a very well-funded entity. We have a recovery mode mechanism in there that we want to make sure is operating operating as it should. If that were to arise when we go into production, there's work being done on mathematical proofs to make sure that the network will mathematically provable way recover, and to make sure that the source code is aligned with that. So that's the only thing that that's the only big thing remaining. Everything else is just minor technical things. Meaning like features to make it easy for other organizations to create decentralized identifiers on the network, software for accelerators, things like that. It's not technically difficult things to do. It's just things that are last minute tying up loose ends. So the goal here is to launch in 2019. But at the same time, the network is ready when it's ready. We don't want to rush it out into production. We want to make sure that we're doing this in a controlled way and in a responsible way. Okay, so that is kind of where we are with the test networks and in the march towards production. Let me pause there and see if there are any questions on where we are or how things have been developed to date. Any questions on that? Okay, no questions. I'm going to keep going then. Next up is the status of the nonprofit incorporation. Nonprofit incorporation started a number of months ago. We have engaged, so there was general agreement that we incorporate the nonprofit in Canada. That felt like the place that had the best kind of balance of having a good nonprofit environment. It was neutral and so on and so forth. We have engaged a law firm. The name of the law firm, Adam, is Drash Aptizer. Is that right?
Yeah, Drash Aptizer. Yeah.
Sorry, I always get the pronunciation of that wrong. But we're working with them with our, bylaws and all the necessary paperwork. They do specialize in nonprofit incorporation in Canada, and that continues. Mishy has been fantastic and has been reviewing some of that, some of those documents. If you would like to see those documents, we're happy to share them with you. They're still a bit of a work in progress and continue to be refined. You will absolutely be able to see, those documents before the organization is handed over to each of you. So there's no liability that you're incurring in any way, shape, or form at present. That won't happen for a while. But to be clear, the board is being set up so that, there will be directors and officers insurance already in place before it's handed over to any one of you. You will have had a chance to review the all of the legal paperwork in detail before the organization's handed over to you. Any questions, any of that stuff, we will cover before you take the helm of the organization. So that continues, and again, it's one of those things that it'll be done when it's done, when we feel like the bylaws and the agreements are all appropriate for what we want to achieve with this initiative. Anything that I missed, Adam? Anything you want to add there?
No, I believe you covered it.
Okay. And again, if you want access to any of those documents, please let us know, and we're happy to give you access to those. Okay, so that's the status of the nonprofit incorporation. The next thing that we had on the agenda was how we are intending to hand the VerisOne network over to each of you for operation. And I think what we're going to try and cover is like how we're hoping that the community and the advisors and how the board will all interact and whatnot. So we're going to cover, so the next topic up is the process of handing.
Before we move on to the next topic, I believe Xiaodong has joined us. I don't know if you want to give Xiaodong Li a chance to introduce himself.
I think he said he was just going to follow in text and he was not able to dial in.
Okay, excuse me.
Xiaodong is another one on the board of governors. We have not had a chance to add him to the website yet, but hopefully he'll be able to join us in a future call. But it's great that he's following along in IRC. There's one network over to the board of governors. Okay, so next topic up is the process of handing the Veris One network over to the board of governors. Let me review really quickly what we're suggesting that the process is, or the process design is right now, and then how it fits in with the process design. It does not mean that the board needs to continue using that process. We just needed something in place to kind of demonstrate kind of how decisions are made. So I'll go over kind of the vision, and then we can talk about the details of how this actually happens. So the Veris One network right now is a bunch of source code. It's a bunch of technology that Digital Bazaar has created and put together. All of the source code is available on GitHub for viewing and all that kind of stuff. The desire is to hand the management of that source code over to the Veris One foundation and decouple DigitalBazaar's involvement with the day-to-day operation or just the operation of the network, right? So this is meant to be a global infrastructure. You cannot have a corporation, a for-profit corporation taking any part in the governance of that network. At least that's our fundamental belief. And so what we're trying to do is set up a community and foundation to take over the management of this global network. And there are three parts to kind of how we expect that community to operate. In general, there's a W3C community group that we're trying to make, kind of the heart of the public community. So public community members can join the community group. There are no fees to join. Anyone on the planet can join the mailing list and these calls and have a discussion around the Veris One network. The hope is that things operate bottom up, meaning that the community discusses new plans for the network, new features that they'd like it to have, changes in governance, any of those things should be introduced publicly, debated publicly, and once there's a consensus of some kind, any kind of proposal is sent up to what we're calling the advisory council. And the advisory council consists, and your advisory council isn't here today, we wanted to just have this be a board discussion, but the advisory council consists of folks like Ni Quaynor, Pindar Wong, Kalir Young, Marcus Kummer, Kim Duffy, Paul Makapetris, Christopher Allen, Cab Morris, Sharon Mitchell, Joe Andrew. These are all experts in identity systems, internet infrastructure systems. These are people that are supposed to be able to provide real technical and governance feedback to the board so that the board can make the best decision for the network. So again, to review, the community group discusses things, comes to consensus on a particular proposal. The advisory council vets that kind of from a technical and political and governance expert perspective. And then they put it to the Board of Governors to either approve or reject or modify the proposal before it takes effect on the network. If it is a technical proposal, then there's something called the maintainer. Right now, the maintainer is the technical maintainer of the network. They're responsible for all the technical, making sure that the network is, from a technical perspective, operating as the community and Board of Governors desire to operate. So if a proposal passes, then, and it's a technical proposal, then the board instructs the maintainers to make it so. And then, of course, the maintainers can push back and say, you know, whether or not from a technical perspective there's anything that would, like, for example, if they, you know, if a proposal passes and the technical group is concerned that it would destabilize the network from a technical perspective, they'd be able to provide that input. Or if it's kind of a process or governance thing and the board believes that it would result in governance issues, the board can push back in that nature. So that's the vision of how we hope that this system operates. It certainly borrows quite a bit from the way the World Wide Web Consortium operates, the way decisions on internet infrastructure are made. It's a bit more open, we believe, than some of the other mechanisms, which has its benefits and drawbacks, clearly. But the hope is that, you know, we put the network in each of your very capable hands, and you have a broad community of advisors to pull from to make a decision that's the best for, what is supposed to be this global infrastructure. Okay, so that's the vision. How do we hand this system over to you? So there are a couple of things that are required to be in place before this happens. One, the nonprofit has to be there. We have to make sure that you have good liability coverage through D&O insurance so that when you take the helm of the VerisOne Foundation, there is a good legal framework to operate from and to protect you for any of the decisions that you're going to be making. The second thing is that, you know, we need to slowly build that community up. We already have a very active community in the Credentials Community Group and at the World Wide Web Consortium. We've waited a bit to get, a flood of people to join, to one, be fairly, to be respectful of your time, frankly, right? So, we want to make sure that we are not creating an enormous amount of work for each of you, because again, your time is incredibly valuable, and we want to make sure that you're pulled in only for only for decisions that are equal to the value of your time. The community needs to be put in place. The nonprofit needs to be put in place with the appropriate legal paperwork. So that means bylaws and licenses and, all these other things that Mishi and Dre Chaptizer is helping us with. And then finally, you need a network to actually be functioning for you to govern, right? So the test nets currently exist, and there are people writing software against the test nets, which is great. This testnet is actually being used in a number of commercial proof of concepts, pilots, and things like that, with multiple different governments and corporations. And we can get into who's using the network, the test networks, in a bit. But fundamentally, there needs to be an operating network for you to govern. Now the thing that we have been struggling with is when is the right time to hand that network over to you? Because if we hand the network over to the foundation too early, it could mean that the foundation is put into a situation that is unfavorable. Like if the network fails, you know, in the next 6 months, it could look fairly bad for the foundation. At present, Digital Bazaar is taking the entirety of the liability for creating the technology, you know, operating the test nets, and so on and so forth. At some point, that needs to be handed over to the foundation, but we don't want to do it until we're absolutely sure that we're giving you our best attempt at an operational network that is not going to create a number of headaches for you when you take it over. So the proposal right now is for us to ensure that the foundation is set up, the community is set up, the paperwork's in place, and for us to launch the production network and make sure it's operating, and then hand it over to the Board of Governors. We believe that that's the right path because it results in the least amount of headache for you. And then once it's handed over, the board has complete authority to modify the bylaws, the operating agreements, modify how the community operates, request that the maintainer modify the technology, all that kind of stuff, right? So just because, and we could discuss where the board basically says we're not going to take over control until you change X, Y, and Z, right? So it's a conversation that I feel like, you know, we have to make sure that that the handoff is as smooth as possible. The other reason for operating this way is that, you know, we are trying to, again, be respectful of your time, and there are just day-to-day decisions that we're having to make about, you know, how the technology is implemented that would require an enormous amount of background knowledge to understand why we're making one decision over another. And we're perfectly happy to have those discussions, but I think the goal is to try and be as easy on your time as possible, and I hope we've been that, you know, today. Okay, so when does the handoff happen? Our hope is after we go into production and those other things are in place. So let me pause there. I see, Henriette, you're asking a question in IRC. Let me pause here and see if there are any questions about or objections or concerns about anything that I've just said. Like, does anyone feel like that's not the right way to do things? We should be doing at least one of those things differently. And then, Henriette, I think we're going to just jump right into your questions if there are no other questions from anyone else. Great. And Anya is saying she thinks this all makes imminent sense. So thank you, Anya. Okay. So, Henriette, you asked a number of questions. I'm just going to read them for people that might not be on our IRC. So what day-to-day operational capacity will the foundation have once it has been created? What will be the day-to-day responsibilities of the board? What will be the liability of the board? How are relationships within the community maintained? What is the responsibility of the board in relation to the community? When does the board interact with the advisors? I mean, all fantastic, excellent questions. And Charles is saying he had many of the same questions. So let's go down it. I don't know if I have good answers to each one of those, but I think these are fantastic things to start the conversation. So I'm just going to go from the top down. What day-to-day operational capacity will the foundation have once it has been created? The day-to-day is meant to be, the burden of the day-to-day operation of the network is meant to be placed onto the maintainers. So specifically in the beginning, it will be Digital Bazaar, because we built a network and we know how best to operate it. But in time, the board has the ability to say, you know what, Digital Bazaar is no longer going to be the maintainer of the network. It should be this other organization there. So the board has complete authority to remove us entirely from maintaining the network and use someone else to do that, or use a combination of different organizations to do that. But the key here being that day-to-day operations are meant to be handled by the maintainer, and their remit is basically to make sure the network is up and running 24/7, 365. And it is operating in the way that the board has instructed. The board is meant to provide guidance. It's meant to provide governance over the network and guidance to the maintainer that you know, the network operates in a particular capacity. So for example, if the board says we believe that the target price for a decentralized identifier on the network should be X, and there's agreement in the community for that, if it is technically feasible to do that, then the maintainer is tasked with coming up with a proposal on how to change the technical characteristics of the network to achieve that, and then execute on that plan. So the board is meant to have kind of, it's not meant to be a day-to-day thing. It's meant to be a horizon, you know, exercise. It's meant to be about long-term governance and long-term decisions in the network. Henriette, did that, I'll go through the other questions, but was that an acceptable response, at least for now? Okay, and Henriette's saying thanks, very clear. Okay, second question. What will be the day-to-day responsibilities of the board? I think I covered this slightly. So the only time the board has to become involved, let's not talk about the technical stuff, because I think the technical stuff is clear. Basically, the board says, we want this technical change to be made, and the maintainer goes, yes, we think we can do that, or no, that would lead to the failure of the network, and here's why. And then there would be a discussion between the two, right? Again, board's providing guidance, the maintainer's deals with the day-to-day of making it happen. But let's look at governance. So what about day-to-day governance? The reason we're using a W3C community group as kind of a, the W3C Verisimilitan community group is meant to do the day-to-day governance discussion, right? So it doesn't mean making decisions. It means, hey, we noticed Nation X is using Verisimilitan in this way, and that is concerning to us because of, you know, reason why. So someone has said, look, I think there's a problem with the network. We really need to discuss, you know, how to fix it. The community, and this includes anyone on the internet can join the community and have that discussion. The community is going to have that discussion. There's an expectation that the community will have calls just like this, transcribed, recorded. You know, there are thousands of other groups like this at W3C. Certainly hundreds of them have met in the same way that we're meeting now to have these kinds of discussions. Kind of that is going to, you know, happen in the community, and then eventually, and the advisors are a part of that community, and they will participate in that discussion, so they will naturally provide input, and at some point, the community will come to consensus and propose something to the board, and that is when the board's expected to get involved. Now, to be clear, that proposal that comes to the board will be well written, and it will be linked to audio recordings and transcriptions of the discussion that led to that proposal. But that proposal is the only thing the board is meant to look at and consider. You're not expected to take part in the day-to-day discussions. You're more than welcome to. But again, we realize that each of your time is very precious, and we want to make sure that we don't make you know, this position too much of a burden on you. Henriette, did that cover the day-to-day responsibilities question?
Yes, thanks so much, Manu, and that was very helpful. But I guess it would be good for the board to be kind of at least track the community discussion.
Yes.
And yes. Would you guys let us know when? What is the best way for us to do that, to keep track of that discussion?
There's a mailing list. So there's a mailing list, and that is the primary mode of communication, of asynchronous communication. So there'll be discussion on the mailing list, and then there'll be calls like this. If we hit a regular cadence, there will be regular calls for the Veris One community group. And you will absolutely you can subscribe to the mailing list if you want. That's the best way to be aware of everything happening in the Veris One community. So far, and Anya's saying, so far the mailing list has not been so active, or am I on the right mailing list? No, the mailing list has not been very active. It was created. This is the first time that we're really trying to, you know, get that kind of community group thing rolling, and we wanted to make sure that we had the discussion with the board first before we really put effort into that. So let me find the link to that mailing list so everyone has that, so it shows up in the minutes. I'm going to share a link in the chat channel. So this is the Veris One community group, and the mailing list that I'm talking about is this one right here. And there are links there where you can click to subscribe. But specifically, let me show you the link. So to join the Veris One CG. There's the link. So if you click on that, you will automatically be subscribed to the mailing list, and you will join there. And we have, you know, there are 45 people that have signed up to that mailing list so far, and we have not been very public about asking people to join. We wanted to again have this discussion with the board before we did that. Yes, Michi is asking for more clarity about the relationship between DigitalBazaar and Veris One. So let me get to that right at the end of Henriette's question. So I'm noting the time, and we have 6 minutes left, so I'm going to try and get through all of the rest of the questions. So Henriette, how are relationships with the community maintained? The hope is through the mailing list and calls like this. In general, we believe that is as open as we can be with you know, making sure that everyone that's participating is heard. What is the responsibility of the board in relation to the community? That is a good question that I don't have an answer for right now. So the expectation is that the board pays attention to the community. We could make it so that the board actually has some kind of governing authority over the community. Typically in W3C, you name chairs of the community. So these are people responsible for the week-to-week operation. I didn't want to suggest that the Board of Governors be those people, again, because we're trying to be respectful of your time. So that's an open question that I think that the board's going to have to decide, right? Who is going to lead the community group? And it will need it. I mean, you know, any collection of you know, people, you know, needs a set of people that do the administrative day-to-day operation. We didn't make it the board again because we felt like that would be asking too much of you. But again, I think we do need to have that discussion. So I think that's an open question that we need to discuss. And then how does the board interact with the advisors? It's through the community. You know, the advisors are there because the board can specifically call on them to come in and advise on a particular area of interest. Your advisors have been selected because they are they have a deep, deep knowledge about, you know, the technical side of these things or the governance side of these things. Each one of you certainly has that background as well. But the advisory council is meant to be more of kind of a technical advisory capacity than more than a governance advisory capacity. Let's see. And then, Mishi, your question was a little more clarity about the relationship between Digital Bazaar and VerisOn. So Digital Bazaar is a for-profit organization that you know, I co-founded 17 years ago. So we have existed for a very long time. We have never taken on venture capital. We're 100% employee owned. It is our mechanism for trying to enact some of these technologies into the world. So we work very heavily in open standards, so World Wide Web Consortium Internet Engineering Task Force, to try and improve the next generation web and internet. We have been focused on payment technologies, identity technologies, security and privacy technologies for a very long time. And what we're trying, you know, and VerisOn basically is an attempt to try and bring a really strong privacy preserving identifier mechanism to the web so that it becomes a part of, you know, the web and internet, which is global infrastructure. I would say, you know, it's an attempt for identity for all, but that is a very vague, you know, statement. We're trying to make sure that every person on the planet is capable of engaging with other people on the planet without worrying about censure, without worrying about, you know, privacy violations and things of that nature. So Digital Bazaar, that's what we do. But we are a for-profit corporation, fundamentally, right? I mean, we have customers, we build products for customers, this is a technology that cannot be run by a for-profit company. Or, I mean, it could be, but I don't think that's the right way to do it. Some of the other folks, you know, on this call believe that. I know that there are other people that feel like a for-profit corporation could run the network, but fundamentally, I think that's just not the direction that we took with VerisOn. So we built the network out and the technology. We put it out there, and we need somebody to take it over, a nonprofit foundation to take it over, so that it is not corrupted by capitalistic ideals. Anyway, that's kind of what we have. Right now we're the maintainer, and we are beholden to the VerisOn Board of Governors. So for example, when we hand the network over to the VerisOn Foundation, if the Board of Governors feels like we are not the appropriate organization to do technical maintenance for the network, then we are, you know, the Board of Governors can remove us and put somebody else in our place. There are some details around, you know, the license that we're using for the software and how the handoff happens and all that kind of stuff that we do need to discuss. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today, but that is not, you know, I want to make it clear that we absolutely want to have that discussion. So, Mishi, was that an acceptable response, start of the conversation for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure we'll find clarity as we go forward with this.
Yes, and it's not. And there is no clarity right now. I want to make it very clear that this is a conversation. You know, we don't know all of the details yet, but we feel like we have a fantastically talented group of people together that are gonna, you know, help us come to something that works for everyone. Okay. With that, we're at the top of the hour, and again, trying to be respectful of your time. We're going to end the call at this point. If any of you want to have another call like this, or you want to follow up on anything that we discussed, we're happy to schedule another one. We can keep in touch over the mailing list please do, you know, send an email out if you want to have an asynchronous discussion of the mailing list, or if you feel like we need to have another call, please let us know. We'll happily schedule another one and run it just like we ran this one. And with that, thank you everyone, each of you, so much for your time. It's really a pleasure to have each of you involved, and we're really looking forward to continuing to work with each of you. Thanks so much, all. Take care. Bye.
Good, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.